decide whether prosecutors get access to everything they took. Aaron Katursky, ABC News, New York.
First Lady Melania Trump is recovering after her recent surgery. ABC's Karen Travers is at the White House.
It's been over 2 weeks since First Lady Melania Trump underwent a surgical procedure for what her office called a benign kidney condition. She spent 5 days in the hospital but hasn't been seen in public since she returned home to the White House. But a spokeswoman for Mrs. Trump says she's doing really well and has been involved in internal meetings since last week.
President Trump hosts a sports and fitness day at the White House this afternoon. Vanity Fair magazine says he'll also have a visit from Kim Kardashian. She plans to ask the president to pardon a first-time drug offender who is serving a life sentence. This is ABC News.
It's Ask the Governor, in depth with Virginia Governor Ralph Northam. Now, live from the Glass Enclosed Nerve Center, it's Deborah Feinstein and Mark Lewis.
We are joined this morning by Governor Northam, along with NBC4's Julie Carey. We'll be taking some of your calls and questions for the next hour at 800, and make that 877-336-1035. The number again, 877-336-1035. Submit your question on Twitter using the hashtag AskThe, or you can pose a question at WTOP.com. And again, this month, like us on Facebook, and you can watch the show via Facebook Live. Good morning, Governor. Nice to see you back in D.C.
Morning,
again.
Governor.
Good morning. Thank you all for having me. It's always good to be back in the Nerve Center.
Mm-hmm. Great to have you.
Today may be a big day. A major vote in the Virginia Senate may be coming today, Governor. A vote that could potentially end this long budget standoff and avoid a government shutdown at the beginning of July. It's a vote that could also expand Medicaid to some 400,000 low-income Virginians, a move that has long been opposed by Republican lawmakers. We understand, Governor, that the Senate is in session right now, and so there could be some action within the next couple of hours on this issue. And the votes, reportedly, are there to expand Medicaid, barring any last-minute maneuvers. What can you tell us?
Well, it's been a long time coming, Mark, and it's good to be here today, but we're obviously watching closely what's going on in Richmond. And you know, we are hopeful that the Senate, which came back in yesterday and looked at some amendments, I think convened at 9 o'clock this morning. They're going to go through some more amendments, and hopefully we'll be able to vote out a budget that is good for all Virginians, that is structurally sound, that expands health coverage in the Commonwealth of Virginia, and that protects our AAA bond rating. So we're going to watch closely. Hopefully that'll happen as the day proceeds, and then that budget bill would go back to the House for their approval and then to my desk. And I've told people it's time to put the excuses aside. We need a budget in the Commonwealth of Virginia, and I'm hopeful I'll get it either today or tomorrow.
So you had indicated last time, and we will ask again, what the negotiating process had been like. What kind of arm twisting has been going on to get us to this point right now?
Well, there have been some tough negotiations from folks in the House, their leadership, the chairman of Appropriations, Chris Jones, and I have had a great working relationship. Kirk Cox, who's our Speaker of the House, he has certainly been part of the negotiations. And then, on the Senate side, Emmett Hanger has really carried a lot of the water, and some of the rest of the leadership in the Senate, Republicans, have chosen not to be at the table. And Emmett Hanger and Frank Wagner have voted or been in favor of expanding coverage, and we're going to watch them closely today. Hopefully they'll vote in favor of this, and we'll get a budget out of the Senate, and it'll go to the House.
More than 30 states have expanded Medicaid under Obamacare, with the federal government paying most of the cost. As you look back over the long history of this debate in Virginia and the amount of money that's been on the table for Virginia that we've heard about for some time, can you wrap your arms around why it has taken the state so long to come to terms on this issue, particularly when it runs such a tightly controlled Medicaid program?
Well, Mark, we've been fighting this for 5 years, talking about the importance of expanding coverage to up to 400,000 working Virginians. These are Virginians that may have one, two, or three jobs, but the cost of health care has risen a lot faster than their salary. So they have no options other than to go to the emergency room, when they're sick or their families are sick. And from a business perspective, when we talk about the finances and the budget of the Commonwealth of Virginia, every day that we don't expand coverage, we're not only leaving on the table, but really forfeiting to other states who we compete with over $5 million a day. And so from a business perspective, it makes absolutely no sense. And since January of 2014, Virginia has forfeited over $10 billion with the B dollars. And it's just time. I've told them it's time to put the excuses aside. You know, whether you're in favor of the Affordable Care Act or not, and there are some very good things about the Affordable Care Act, but it is the law of the land. And we need to take advantage of the resources that we've sent to Washington and bring them back to Virginia so that we can use them for things like higher education, K through 12 education, pay raises for our state employees, for our law enforcement. These are funds, resources that can be used. And one thing we've talked about in the past, Mark, is the opioid crisis. And, you know, there are consequences to limited resources, and we need those resources in Virginia to help these individuals.
All right, Governor, much more to come as we're just getting started with this month's edition of Ask the Governor on WTOP. Your calls and questions are welcome at 877-336-1035.
We are back with Ask the Governor. Virginia Governor Ralph Northam joining us here in studio. Call us at 877-336-1035. And again, you can submit some questions on Twitter using the hashtag AskThe or propose a question at WTOP.com. And again, join us on Facebook Live as well. We are going to go to our blog where we have some questions for you, Governor. One of them from the Shenandoah Valley. As Medicaid expansion is set to be approved, it's saddled with work requirements that for some are simply impossible, but for others are impossible for lack of appropriate jobs. Would you advocate for a job guarantee and student debt cancellation as well?
Well, one of the things that has been part of the negotiations is the work requirement and what they call a lockout. And I have said all along that the simpler we can do this without getting into what we call an 1115 amendment, will be easier. And so that's what we've tried to do. But as I said earlier, there's been give and take on both sides. There have been some tough negotiations. So there is a work requirement clause in there. Mm-hmm. I have tried to approach it with a carrot rather than a stick. I don't think that we need to be penalizing people that are out there trying to work, and we'll do everything that we can to help people get back into the workforce. So that's the approach that we've tried to take, and we'll see how they do today in the Senate, and then we'll hopefully that bill will go to the House.
Governor, what happens if the federal government, as some have feared, fail to live up to their obligations under expanded Medicaid? We know that more than 30 states have taken this step. Virginia could be next. What have you told those who are concerned about this, about what would happen? Would Virginia be left holding the bag?
Well, we've obviously got language, you know, in the budget that says if they were to renege on that we would have an out. But, you know, we've been having this discussion now, Mark, for 5 years. And while this discussion has been going on, we have forfeited over $10 billion. So I don't really buy into that argument. As you said, 32 states now have accepted to expand health coverage, and none of them have reversed in their decision. So it's working well for other states, and I think it will be good for the Commonwealth of Virginia as well.
Julie? You know, I spent some time yesterday with a woman out in Manassas. She's an amputee. She is desperately waiting for Medicaid coverage so she can get medication she needs. She can get his prosthetic. She drove down to Richmond today with chocolate cigars in hope of celebrating. But I think what she and a lot of others are wondering is, if this does move ahead, as is expected now, how long is it going to take for this coverage to get to these some 300,000 people, especially when you look at implementing the work requirements, and how ready is the state to implement expansion?
That is an excellent question. And, you know, I've had discussions with folks in Washington. We have talked to them about our plan to expand coverage. We've talked to them about the 1115 amendment, and they're ready for us. And so the answer to your question, here we are almost at the beginning of June. We're looking at implementing this in January of 2019. So about 6 months from now, we should be up and running.
All right, Governor, I'm going to take a phone call from Fran, who's calling in from Woodbridge on our Ask the Governor program. Fran, what's your question for Governor Northam?
Yes, Governor Northam, I don't know if you realize it, but Medicaid, which I'm grateful to have, has been calling me and asking me to have a home health aide come by my home at least twice a month to check on me. I'm a stage 4 lung and brain cancer survivor and haven't been in treatment for 5 years. But yet I can't get a PET scan to make sure that I don't still have cancer. And I don't understand why we're wasting money on resources that we don't when there's thousands of people that need this stuff. And I've told them 5 times I don't need it.
Yeah, Fran, it's a great, great question. I'm glad, number one, that you're doing well, and we're really pleased about that. I suspect some of what you're seeing is part of what we call managed care Medicaid, and this is where we have folks come out and check on individuals, making sure that they're, you know, getting to their doctor's appointments, making sure they're taking their medications, making sure they're having their blood pressure checked, that type of thing, to really to hopefully prevent a lot of things from happening, and to keep people out of the emergency rooms, to keep people out of the ICU. So I hope that, you know, you look at it as a positive thing and not something that interferes with your life. But I suspect and I hope that these folks that are coming to your house are well-meaning. But, you know, if they are bothersome, I think if you let folks know that we could certainly make some modifications. But that's the purpose of having folks come out and interact with individuals that are on Medicaid, is to make sure that they're getting the care that they need.
Governor, another budget-related question. We know that after the battle to secure Metro funding, there has been some frustration expressed by local leaders here in Northern Virginia about losing transportation dollars for road projects and other needs. You have indicated to us on this program that you would be looking for other ways to fund those projects. Any update on that? Will there be sufficient funding for other transportation needs in the region?
Well, we certainly hope so. And Mark, what that entails is that, you know, we were leaders in Virginia to put $154 million on the table to find a dedicated source of revenue for Metro. Washington and Maryland have followed suit, which we're very pleased about. So there'll be a total of $500 million to support Metro. What happened was that, you know, the way that they had written that particular piece of legislation took money out of the Northern Virginia Transportation Authority. So I amended the piece of legislation so that it wouldn't do that. And there were some folks in the Republican House that saw fit to defeat my amendment. And what that does is it takes away funding for other projects here in Northern Virginia, specifically Route 1 and Route 28. It also puts Northern Virginia in a position where they're competing with other parts of the state for funding for roads. So it wasn't a good direction, and I can't do anything to fix it this year, but certainly as we move forward, we're going to make sure that we don't take any more money out of the Transportation Authority in Northern Virginia than we have to.
All right, so we're taking a hit right now, but yes, it could be addressed in future years.
It absolutely will be.
We want to talk with you about an announcement from Metro that's affecting Virginia riders come next summer with closures south of Reagan National Airport. And that has some folks concerned not only about their own commute, but about the future of Metro. And we want to get your thoughts on that and more phone calls as well as we continue with Ask the Governor here on WTOP. This is Ask the Governor on WTOP, taking your calls for Governor Ralph Northam until 11 o'clock at 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. You can pose a question at WTOP.com, tweet a question with the hashtag AskThe, or you can watch us and pose a question on Facebook Live, underway right now.
Governor, the recent announcement from Metro that it's closing some stations next summer for nearly 100 days for major construction work at stations south of Reagan Airport, Reagan National, apparently catching a number of Virginia elected officials in Congress and in local government off guard. Congressman Jerry Connolly told the Washington Post that it's a stunning reversal of commitments made to commuters and leaders of the region. Some riders, of course, expressing frustration that this is coming on the heels of major repairs during Metro's Safe Track program. We know Metro's trying to catch up, obviously, yeah, on a lot of years of maintenance that wasn't accomplished. But how concerned are you that all of this is happening at a time when Metro is already shedding riders? And at what point do you, you know, potentially kill the patient with all the well-intentioned methods of healing it?
Thank you, Debbie. And, you know, we obviously know that the Metro is just so vitally important to the economy, helping people get from point A to point B. We also know that Metro has had some challenges over the years. They got behind on on some safety issues, some maintenance issues. Mm-hmm. And so I think there are going to be some nuisances, if you will, and some things that do put people in difficult positions. But we need, I believe, to make sure we keep up with the maintenance, that we keep Metro safe. And I think in the long run, get it back to where it was so that, you know, people can get to from point A to point B and do it safely. And so I'm not in the middle of the management of Metro, but I suspect that's what the purpose of that is.
Is there any way, to your understanding, that this necessary repair work, they're rebuilding platforms and other work that must happen, is there any way that that can be done without shutting down these stations for an extended period? Is there any way that the repairs can be done while the stations are functioning in some way without it taking decades to complete?
I would certainly hope so. And, you know, we have great people working for the Commonwealth, our Secretary of Transportation, Shannon Valentine. So this is something that we'll certainly have to sit down and talk with the management of Metro and see if we can do this in a way that is not burdensome to the people that need to get to work and to other areas.
On our live blog, somebody writing in saying, please explain what's your understanding of how WMATA will resolve chronic oversight and accountability issues? Are you satisfied that WMATA is headed in the right direction?
I am. And, you know, we've introduced legislation. We've changed the makeup of the board, decreased the number of folks that were on the board. And so I think it will be much more efficient. And the other thing, Debbie, that, as I said earlier, there are always consequences to limited resources. And that's been a challenge for Metro. And at least now we have a dedicated source of revenue. We have, I think, good leadership with our current director of Metro. And so I would ask folks to be persistent, but also be patient, that let's do this right and make it safe and make it efficient.
Another transportation issue, Governor, you have signed a bill that calls for a study on whether tolls should be added to Interstate 81, with toll money there potentially going toward improvements such as lane widening on that much-traveled road. Similar to many other roads in this region, VDOT reports that delays on a stretch of 81 near Harrisonburg have increased by 55%, and that efforts to widen it would cost $10 to $15 million for every mile of pavement. Is this the direction that we're headed? We're familiar with our tolls on the Beltway and 66 and down the express lanes of 95, but will most of our highways of the future become toll roads in order to afford necessary improvements and maintenance?
I think we still have to look at, you know, individual projects, but specifically on I-81, a very highly traveled piece of roadway, especially a lot of trucks that are not from Virginia, and it's a very, very dangerous road. And so we desperately need to address I-81. I think it'll be important for opening up rural Virginia, especially the Southwest. And so we are going to study how to pay for it, because you just made the point, these projects are very, very expensive, and the money does not fall out of the sky. So we need to look at ways that we can fund them. And I think one of the things that's been being looked at, as I just said, a lot of this traffic, a lot of these trucks are from out of state, and they're traveling through Virginia using our roads. So I think we'll be open-minded, but certainly looking at options to how to toll those individuals that are, you know, are being heavy users of those roads.
So the tolling in that case could be more toward commercial vehicles versus,
that's right,
individual drivers. Do you have a sense of what the saturation point may be for tolling? Things can hit a flashpoint about $40 tolls at times on 66 and that sort of thing. But, you know, you're making the point about there are needs and you have to address them and there is not infinite funding. But what is the saturation point for all of this? How much will drivers be able to sustain and reach a comfortable balance?
You know, it's a great question, and I don't have an answer for you, but I do know that, you know, we can't keep pouring concrete. We can't keep pouring our way out of traffic, and we need to look at rail. We need to look at other forms of transit in order to move people from point A to point B. But to your point, it is very expensive to build these roads, especially if you – I was just out in the Southwest a couple weeks ago announcing some jobs and some other things out there. I mean, when you think about building roads on a flat land, that's one thing. But when you talk about going through mountains and the terrain that they have to go through, it is very, very expensive. So we do have to find, I think we have to be open-minded and look at ways to fund these projects.
And it doesn't look like you're getting a lot of help from Congress. President Trump's infrastructure plan appears to be dead in Congress. What's your level of frustration with that?
Well, you know, I was up in Washington, gosh, I guess it's been 6 weeks now, and talked to the president about infrastructure. We talked to him specifically about I-81. I talked to him about dredging our channels in Hampton Roads for our ports. And, you know, he was open-minded to it, but I don't think his plan has a whole lot in the way of details. And so, to your point, I think a lot of things in the future are going to happen at the state level. And that's why these elections are so important, to have people that are leaders that know what's in the best interest of their states. Because to your point, we're not getting a whole lot of cooperation right now out of Washington.
I'm sorry, Deb.
I was just going to say we're going to break for traffic and weather. We're going to talk about those midterm elections, the importance of them, and, of course, the potential for an Apple campus in Northern Virginia, all that when we come right back. Back with Virginia Governor Ralph Northam. It's WTOP's Ask the Governor program. Give us a call. A few lines still open, 877-336-1035. And again, you can check us out on Facebook and watch the show via Facebook Live.
Let's turn once again to NBC4's Julie Carey.
Governor, you're on the verge of getting one big campaign promise fulfilled with Medicaid expansion, but I want to ask you about another that you talked a lot about on the trail, but I haven't heard much about. It's that G3 initiative yours, which was get skilled, get a job, give back. It was a plan to give Virginians apprenticeships and financial assistance with community college so they can get specialized training that we hear so many employers need. But I have not heard much about that. I'm not really aware of much that happened legislatively. Where does that stand? And is that going to be a second year initiative?
It will be, Julian. We've been so, you know, time consumed with our budget, but certainly the G3 is something that we're working on, and it really ties into workforce development. And we talk about, you know, growing businesses in Virginia and also attracting new businesses. A lot of the jobs that they're looking for to be trained are what we call new collar, and so you don't necessarily need a four-year college or university education. So the G3 program will allow individuals to go to a community college or an apprenticeship program, get their training, their certification, with the understanding that once they have that, they'll give back a year to either public service or in a high-demand area. So it's a very good program. It will require some upfront financing, investment, but we feel it'll be good to help people get into the workforce. And if you think about it, when people have better, higher-paying jobs, it actually brings revenue back into the state. And after 5 years, it'll actually end up paying for itself. So we're very excited about that program.
And how much money is in this budget for it, or is it something that you're deferring?
Yes, I don't have any money in the budget this year. It's about a $37 million investment up front. And so it's something I'll probably do in the next year.
Governor, we learned this week that Virginia Republican Congressman Tom Garrett will not run for his second term in Congress, disclosing, of course, that he is being treated for alcoholism. He becomes now the 44th House Republican to announce retirement ahead of the midterm elections. Obviously, you know, a difficult decision for the congressman, and one that folks should support. But we wanted to get your reaction to those developments. This dramatically changes the race in that 5th district.
It does, Debbie. And, you know, my best to Tom and his family. I served with him in the Senate, and we certainly hope all is well and goes well for him in the future. It does open up that seat. We feel that we're very competitive in that race. We also have several other congressional districts in Virginia that we feel we can change the seats. And so, you know, we're out there working hard, listening to voters, and there's a lot of enthusiasm across the Commonwealth of Virginia. And we're looking forward. You know, we have our primaries in June, and then we'll certainly focus on the November election after that. But I think we have a great chance to pick up some congressional seats this year in Virginia.
What do Democrats in Virginia have to do to win back that seat?
Well, I think we have to keep the enthusiasm going across Virginia. We certainly saw a lot of that in 2017. A lot of people were out there volunteering, knocking on doors, making phone calls. And so what we did in 17 was just made sure that we converted that energy to the polls on Election Day. And we need to continue to do that. A good coordinated campaign we're planning on running in 2018. So, again, we're looking forward to changing some of these seats in 18.
Governor, I want to shift to the 10th district race and an issue that's cropped up there. Some of the Democratic primary candidates there are swearing off corporate PAC donations, and they're critical of the candidate that you've endorsed, Jennifer Wexton, for not promising to turn away that type of donation. Do you think this is going to be a growing trend, though, among Democratic candidates, especially those who call themselves progressives? And can you win campaigns without taking that money?
Yeah, Julie, thank you. It's a great question. And, you know, I think that it will be a continuing trend that we talk about. I think that's why we as a society need to address comprehensive finance reform. There's far too much money in politics. But what I think we need to do as we have that discussion is talk about bilateral disarmament. I mean, you can't just have one side say that they're not going to accept funding while the other side is. It's a tremendous disadvantage. And so these elections, unfortunately, these campaigns are expensive, and we have to find ways of funding them. But to your point, it's something that we'll continue to discuss.
Governor, while we're talking about elections, we want to get a sense of what your plans are to address some ongoing concerns about the integrity of elections in Virginia. We are familiar with voters in the Fredericksburg area that voted in the wrong district last time, but we've also learned that there were additional errors by elections officials that also affected a razor-thin race in Newport News, and that could have shifted control of the House of Delegates to your party. The Washington Post found as many as 6,000 registered Virginia voters were placed in the wrong legislative district in the last election. What is being done to prevent a repeat of this and to ensure integrity in the election process?
Well, Mark, integrity is of utmost importance. And, you know, when we have these campaigns, we want to know that every vote counts. And so I have made some significant changes with the Board of Elections. We've brought in new management. They are well aware of the issues that you just mentioned. We are addressing those. You know, we want to make sure that these elections are done properly. And I would give Virginians confidence that with the changes that we've made, the upcoming elections, I think that will be a lot better than they have been in the past.
So we've been hearing a lot that it was a local error or a local official made a mistake or something like that. Is there something that can be done at the state level?
Absolutely.
To address that?
Absolutely. It starts at the top, and it starts with me. And, you know, it starts with good leadership. And then, as I said, we've made changes in our Board of Elections. And these, you know, regional areas, the districts, they answer to our Board of Elections. So I think Virginians will see that we've made some significant changes, and a lot of those will be in our rearview mirror.
Because I think people are surprised that we didn't hear more of a reaction coming out of the General Assembly during this session, given that the news was so fresh. And the Assembly acted, you know, some years ago on voter ID issues, and we pressed then Governor McDonnell about why is the change necessary, and it was very difficult to get an answer about whether there had been an increase in fraud that was precipitating this change. Here we have seen where there's an issue, and we're not hearing a lot about it coming from lawmakers. It's just curious.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that there's fraud, Mark, but there have been some errors in who's getting what ballots, and we're well aware of those. And again, we've made changes, and I don't think you'll see that happening again.
Lots of callers standing by for the governor. We'll take your calls right after traffic and weather.
This is Ask the Governor on WTOP. Virginia Governor Ralph Northam with us until the top of the hour. Here's your chance to join the conversation. 877-336-1035 is the number to call. That's 877-336-1035. For folks on the phone, we're about to get to you in seconds. Stay with us. You can also submit your question by tweeting it using the hashtag AskThe, or join us for Facebook Live this month.
All right, let's take some calls from our very important and interesting listeners. We're going to first talk with Doug calling in from Fairfax. Doug, what's your question for the governor?
Yeah, good morning, Governor.
Good morning, Doug.
The question for you is about salary increases for our teachers in the Commonwealth, especially in Fairfax County. Do you have some plans for that in the future?
You know, thank you, Doug. And, you know, my wife is an educator, and, of course, I teach at the medical school, but we're big advocates for education. We really want a strong, world-class K through 12 education system in Virginia. So our current budget this year, if we can get it passed today, has a 3% raise for our teachers. You know, Doug, I suspect I'm preaching to the choir here, but our teachers in Virginia are making on average about $9,200 less than the national average. And if we're going to recruit and retain talented teachers, we have to pay them. So if we can get this budget approved today, then I think that the teachers will be pleased, and we're at least moving in the right direction with a 3% pay raise.
Governor, another education-related question coming in from Greg in Springfield. Greg, go ahead. You're on with the governor. Greg, are you there?
Yes. I'm right here. Are you there?
Go ahead, sir, with your question. Yes.
Yes. Hi, Governor. Tourism and families. Are we going to finally do what Maryland did and put in with teeth that schools have to start after Labor Day? Tourism and families.
Greg, that has been an ongoing discussion each year. As you know, the tourism industry would like school to start after Labor Day. We have tried to leave that up to different regions in the Commonwealth of Virginia. But, you know, I really suspect that we're going to need to think outside the box. How are we educating our children? One of the things that we're discussing, do we need to talk about year-round education for our children? So I think we need to sit down, Greg, look at all the options. We certainly need to protect the tourism industry. But most importantly to me is that we give our children in the Commonwealth of Virginia access to a world-class education. So I'd be curious to hear folks like you and other Virginians how you feel about starting school before Labor Day or after Labor Day or year-round schools, et cetera. But, again, we need to make sure that we're educating our children and preparing them for 21st century jobs.
Let's talk to Jim, who's calling in from Great Falls. Hi, Jim. What's your question?
Hi. Thank you, Governor. My question has to do with K-12 STEM education. We talk to a lot of Northern Virginia companies, and tech companies all complain that our schools are not turning out STEM-trained professionals. We found after-school programs have worked very well, such as robotics competition. What will your administration do to increase after-school STEM programs?
Thank you for the question, Jim, and we are tremendous advocates for, I actually call it STEAM-8, so science, technology, engineering, the arts, math, and healthcare. But these are the jobs, Jim, of the 21st century, things like cybersecurity, unmanned aerial systems, biotechnology, artificial intelligence, data collection, data analysis. Those are the jobs that we need to prepare our children for. And so we have an all-out effort to make sure that we're opening up the pipeline from our youth to these 21st century jobs, working with our colleges and universities, working with our community colleges, working with dual enrollment so that we put more emphasis on vocational and technical training at the high school level. And then most importantly is early childhood education, starting things like coding, introducing our children at a young age to these STEM-related areas. And so we have a great Secretary of Education. I have a workforce development officer that answers to me. Good things are happening in Virginia as we prepare our youth for these 21st century STEM jobs.
Governor, let's go to line 4. Greg is calling in with a military question. Greg, go ahead. You're on with the governor.
Morning, Governor. As a former military man, I'm sure you appreciate this question. Why do our active duty service members who are stationed outside the Commonwealth or overseas have to pay state taxes, yet there's a state law that allows people who work in the state, non-residents, for less than 6 months are tax exempt?
Great question, Greg. And as you know, I'm a veteran of the Army. 8 years I served in Desert Storm. And you know, you probably know this, but there are certain of our active duty members that establish their residence in states like Texas or Florida where they don't have to pay state taxes. And we certainly want to be open-minded and have our doors open for our military in Virginia. So I think it's something that we need to address as we move forward. But to your point, we want to make sure that Virginia is the most veteran-friendly and also the most active duty-friendly state in this country. And that's an area, I agree with you, that needs to be addressed.
Another veteran-related question from our Facebook Live. Jay is watching, and he wants to know what you're doing to help veterans obtain medical marijuana and stop veterans from being pushed out of the housing market. Two big concerns of veterans.
Jay, thank you for your question. And we have actually made a lot of progress in Virginia with medical marijuana. 2 years ago, we introduced legislation to use it to treat intractable epilepsy. This past year, we opened it up to other medical conditions. I remind people all the time, Jay, that there are probably over 100 medicines that we use on a routine basis that come from plants. So we need to be open-minded about the use of cannabis. And we're making progress in Virginia. This past year, we actually talked about decriminalizing marijuana. The scheduling of marijuana needs to be changed so that we can get better data, better research on it. So a lot of things need to happen. We've taken some small, slow steps in Virginia, but I think we need to continue moving in that direction.
All right, we'll let the governor take a break after that rapid-fire round of questions, and we'll come back with much more, including some questions about Apple looking perhaps to locate offices in Virginia, and also quite a few questions coming into WTOP about gas pipelines in Virginia. We'll get some of the governor's views on that next. Back with the final moments of this month's Ask the Governor on WTOP. Virginia Governor Ralph Northam is with us until 11 o'clock. There's still time for a couple of phone calls, 877-336-1035. If you can get in, 877-336-1035.
Well, Northern Virginia, among Apple's preferred options to build a new $5 billion office complex, the Washington Post says that 4 million square foot campus could employ about 20,000 workers. And of course, this is happening at the same time that Amazon is also eyeing Virginia as a possible site for its second headquarters. So as far as Apple is concerned, those plans reportedly include Crystal City, Fairfax Loudoun along the line there, and the Scotts Run development out in Tysons. What have you heard about any of this? Give us a bit of a status update.
Well, we're certainly excited about the fact that Amazon and Apple are looking at coming to Virginia. We want to make sure that businesses in Virginia are able to grow and also that we can attract new businesses to Virginia. We want to make sure also that it works for our taxpayers. So we've had discussions with Apple and with Amazon. And what I hear, Debbie, the most important thing is workforce development. They want to make sure that we're able to train the 21st century workforce. And we talked about that a little bit earlier. They're also very interested in inclusivity. Their employees want to know that that we don't discriminate in the Commonwealth of Virginia, that our doors are open, our lights are on. And so that's something that we've been very proud of, that we want to welcome people to the Commonwealth of Virginia. So I don't know what their final decisions are going to be, but obviously we want to do everything that we can to attract companies such as Amazon and Apple. And,
are you having ongoing discussions with them?
No. We've had some earlier discussions, but they've been pretty low-key. And, you know, they're out there looking at the sites that are available in Virginia. And that's a decision that they'll make at the end of the day.
As exciting as this is for Virginia, is there a level of concern, let's say you hit the jackpot and both Apple and Amazon choose Virginia? Talk about the impact of having that many new residents coming into an already congested area.
Well, and, you know, congestion is an issue. Certainly transportation and infrastructure is an issue. Being able to train the workforce is an issue. But whether it's Apple or Amazon, we need to do these things. So we're moving forward with things like Metro, with our workforce development. Affordable housing is another big issue, especially for Northern Virginia. So all of these things are and need to be addressed.
Before we run out of time, I do want to address an issue that has triggered an overwhelming number of emails and tweets to WTOP as well as phone calls. And this is regarding the two proposed natural gas pipelines that would stretch across parts of Southwest Virginia. Governor, as you know, there have been some fellow Democrats, including some in this area, that have criticized the projects on a wide range of environmental grounds. Just yesterday, I believe, the Natural Resources Defense Council issued a report that indicated the pipeline could threaten nearby groundwater. Among the questions, what can be done to mitigate any threat to drinking water and to the health and safety of residents? And are you confident that the project is moving forward safely?
Well, I'm very sympathetic to these individuals, and I have listened to them. You know, I grew up on a farm in rural Virginia, so we want to make sure that we protect and conserve our lands in Virginia. We have moved forward with this in a way that is using science and also the law. We're using our agencies in Virginia, the DEQ and the Corps of Engineers, doing this as safely as we can. We're using, I think, the most rigorous enforcement that we have ever done for projects such as this. And we also want to be aware of people's land rights. So, and that falls under the law laws of Virginia, the eminent domain law. So there are a lot of moving parts. These are federal or interstate projects. FERC has had a lot to do with whether these will move forward, but we're doing everything that we can with our agencies, again, the DEQ and the Corps of Engineers in Virginia, to make sure that if they do move forward, that it's done, one, with transparency, two, with science, and three, with the law.
All right. We are going to wrap up on a lighter note here.
Governor, you're going to leave here and go down to Richmond, and you're sharing the stage with Congressman Dave Bratt for a Virginia Public Access Project event that's billed as Lighten Up, It's Just Politics.
Yes.
So would you like to give us a preview of the laughs you're going to be bringing?
Well, we're looking forward to it, Julie. And, you know, I think when Virginians, when they think of entertainment, excitement, and laughter, I mean, they think of Ralph Northam. And so I'm gonna bring my A game to Richmond today. I'm looking forward to sharing the stage with Dave Bratt. You know, he has good hair, so there may be some comments about that, you know, where he gets his product from. So, you know, there's a lot of, I think, a lot of things that are going on in Virginia right now, especially politically, that will give us sources for laughter. So we're looking forward to that later today.
Have you done a stand-up routine before?
I have, with correspondents. So,
pediatric neurologist, Virginia governor, stand-up comic.
That's it.
Ralph Northam. Thanks, Governor. We appreciate you coming on with us for Ask the Governor. We'll see you next month.
Thank you. It's always good to be